Welcome to the Cannon Cast, a weekly podcast from the Cannon, an SB Nation blog covering the Columbus Blue Jackets. I am Will Chase, joined by Pale Dragon. What's up? It's hockey week. It's finally back. How you doing, PD?
I'm doing good. I'm excited for the season to start for real.
So yeah, the final preseason game played out on Saturday against the Penguins. The final roster cuts were unveiled on Sunday. So we know that guys like Igor Chinakov, Cole Sillinger are among those to make final cuts. I was curious, though, if you were surprised by either A, that development that we kind of maybe were already trending towards thinking was going to happen, but it's official, or were you surprised by guys that were not going to be on the club to start off with? Guys, I don't know, I'm throwing names out, Gavin Bayreuther, Kevin Stenlin, Liam Foudy, guys like that. Or obviously, though, we know that there's probably going to be a lot of busy transactions this season between Cleveland and Columbus, so those guys will probably find their way up at some point. But were you surprised with the final roster?
No. Yeah. If you had told me this was the roster at the start of August, then maybe I would have been surprised by some things. But based on the way that camp and preseason unfolded, the roster is, for the most part, what I expected it to be. You just knew based on how they were playing and the opportunities that they were given that Chinakov and Sillinger were going to make the roster. You know, they were getting big time roles in the preseason games, so you had a feeling that was going to be the case. You know, there are guys in the bubble like Emil Bemström is one who I wasn't sure if he would make it just because of the numbers, but I also am glad that he made it because he had a very strong preseason. I think he scored, you know, 4 goals in 4 games or something like that. So happy to see his hard work get him the spot that he had earned. You know, generally, I think it was, for the most part, a pretty merit-based roster there. For the most part, the guys that were sent down to Cleveland are guys that just, you know, weren't good enough. And in some cases, it's not necessarily a knock on them. I think Kevin Stenlin is who he's always been, but there have been guys added that are just better than him at this point. You know, I think probably the one piece that fans could be most frustrated with would be Scott Harrington, but that's, you know, we've certainly beaten that horse to death. He's, I think, definitely the worst skater on this 23-man roster, but, you know, for the role that he's in, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. He's a guy that has been in that seventh defenseman role for years now. He has accepted it without complaint, and that's, you know, that's worthwhile. You know, it's one less headache, one less guy you have to make happy. You know, he could be scratched for weeks at a time and he's going to be fine. He's not going to make an issue of it. He's going to show up. He's going to practice hard. I think coaches like having him around. I think the players like him, and those sort of intangibles shouldn't be a primary factor in putting a guy on the roster. But as far as a tiebreaker with other players, like, those things they carry some value for it. So if he's there to be scratched in the press box, fine. And it also means that it does not hurt his development to be in the press box, because he is who he is at this point. And if he's sitting for a few weeks, you don't have to worry about rust, because he's just the same player he always is, no matter what. Whereas a guy like Gabriel Karlsson, who it feels like he's been around forever, but he's still relatively young. If it means that he can get big time minutes in Cleveland, like, there's still a chance that that could help his game. You know, I don't expect much from him going forward, at least not with this franchise, but there's at least a chance that he could benefit from playing more in Cleveland. So, but generally, though, this roster is what it seemed to be going in this direction in camp. And, you know, I feel good about it. I think there's a lot to like on this roster. There's a lot of offensive talent on here. Like we've been talking about defensively, okay, there's going to be some some adventures, but I'm excited for, you know, scoring depth up and down the lineup. I think that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, the power play, for one thing, looks to be some optimism there. So very exciting to see hopefully those fireworks translate or carry over from the preseason. And so I think it was in Portslines article from Sunday Just kind of talking about, obviously, the team as they go into Thursday's game against Arizona for the opener, and still trying to figure out the first line center between Voracek and Laine. And as of right now, what would you say that would it be a guy like Roslovic, or do you think, I mean, Cole Sillinger, do you think that he would be able to do it first game?
So I've got up here the from Jeff Svoboda, he posted what the practice lines were. And so currently Alex Texier is the center on that line. He played in that role on Saturday against Pittsburgh. I get the impression that Coach Larson isn't really that enthused by it, but it seems like he feels like that's the best fit for now. You know, obviously in preseason, we saw a lot of different guys on that line. We saw Sillinger on there. We saw Jenner with those guys. That actually worked surprisingly well. So I don't think this is set in stone. I think we might see a lot of different things even as the season goes on. So yeah, I've not been thrilled with Texier in between those guys, but you know, I don't think Roslovic fits there just because, you know, he doesn't have the defensive chops to help those guys on that part of the game. So he's almost like too similar to them. So it makes more sense to have him with other guys. I'd like to see Sillinger get a shot with that line again at some point. But yeah, if Texier's there for now as a placeholder, that's fine for me. And I think it's good for Texier, because if anything's going to get his game going, I think he'll be playing between those two guys, because both Laine and Voracek played well in preseason, regardless of who was their center. Obviously, they both did very well in the power play. So it's a good opportunity for Texier, but that's, you know, that line, that's fine. Roslovic is, so today he was skating between Nyquist and Bemstrom, but that was only because Bjorkstrand had the day off for maintenance. So it'd be between Nyquist and Bjorkstrand. So given how poor Roslovic is on defense, but Nyquist and Bjorkstrand are both very responsible defensive forwards. So I like that line a lot. And obviously all those guys have great offense to their game. So that's a very solid second line. The third line looks to be Jenner, Sillinger, Domi. Think about it. When we were recording last week, did we have any thought that Domi was going to be ready for the opener?
Nope.
It's ridiculous. And here he was. We heard, you know, late last week that he was cleared for full contact. Saturday, he got to play in his first preseason game. He got a goal. And that line of Jenner, Sillinger, Domi looked pretty good. Those guys seem to fit well together. That's a line that has a lot of sandpaper to it. You know, all those guys like to hit. But there's speed on that line. There's scoring ability on that line. You know, Jenner showed quite a bit of scoring touch there in preseason. The game I was at, he scored 2 goals. So that's an interesting line. I think that's a good line for Sillinger. Guys that can stand up for him, protect him. I don't love having Domi at right wing. I want to see him back at center at some point here. Maybe even put him on that top line. Now, I know he doesn't bring the defensive element you're looking for there, but I don't know. Just, you know, give him sheltered starts, put him all offense. I think he's got the passing ability to fit really nicely with them and the shooting ability to fit nicely with them. I'd like to see him back at center at some point once he gets fully recovered or whatever, because we have so many natural right wingers like Voracek, Bjorkstrand, Bemstrom, and then Chinakhov. So it came out today that Chinakhov's probably not going to play on Thursday. And that's frustrating because I think he clearly played well enough to make the roster. And I think he has clearly played well enough to play every day. Today in line rushes, he was alternating on the fourth line right wing with Gregory Hoffman. So, and Brad Larson had a quote. He said, we will manage that. He's not going to sit here and not play. I can tell you that. If it goes longer than a game or two, we're 2.5 hours up the road to Cleveland. The luxury is he can go there, play, and come back. He can sit there for the weekend or a couple weeks. We'll be real cognizant of that. He's a young guy who needs to play. The last thing we want to do is have him not play. So, I mean, I think it's the right perspective that you want to have him playing. But I think you're overthinking it to not have him play on Thursday. Like, yeah, if he's good enough to play, then just play the guy. There are other guys that you can sit in place of him to get him in the lineup. And, you know, even if it's the fourth line, not ideal, but you'd be able to get him power play minutes as well. You'd get him extra minutes that way. If he doesn't play Thursday, I hope he plays Saturday. If he doesn't play either of the first two games, then I'm going to start to be upset. I will warn fans now, though, don't panic yet. It's too early for that. It's Monday. The game is Thursday. Things could change between now and then. Someone else could maybe get hurt in practice, and then a spot would open up for him. We don't know.
If Chinakov was not going to be in the lineup Thursday, is it Domi that you automatically would assume would be in that spot, or even someone else? Like, do you think Domi, even though he's back and playing, I would assume they're not necessarily, like, they're not like rushing him, if you know what I mean. Like, they are letting him play, but I feel like he's not going to just be like 100% go, 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 if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it would seem to me that Domi might get some games off just to not push him too much, just depending on what his, you know, conditioning is up to or whatever.
Yeah.
Although the schedule, it's a pretty easy schedule in October. There's a number of off days. There's not too many back-to-backs. There's not too much travel or anything like that. But yeah, certainly Domi being available maybe made some decisions tougher as far as who would make the team and then what the lines would be. Obviously, if Domi were not there, it would make sense to put Chinakov on that third line right wing with Jenner and Sillinger, because that was a line that we saw at times in camp. And again, all things considered, I'd rather see Chinakov on that line because he's the future and Domi really isn't at this point. I mean, I want Domi to play because if he can play and he can play well, then he's a good trade bait. But I want to see Chinakov playing as well because he's good enough and he's the future. So hopefully they figure out some way to make that work. Maybe even drop Domi down to the fourth line, which could make it still a really good fourth line. I know after one of the games, Larson said that, you know, he at least gave lip service to the idea of wanting to be a four line team. He said something like he doesn't want a fourth line that's only playing 6 minutes, which that feels like kind of a shot at the way Torts did things. So, I mean, if the four lines are being rolled relatively evenly, then it's not a problem to have someone playing on the fourth line because that fourth line is still going to get, you know, 10 minutes or something like that, at least. And that's fine. So, yeah, it's frustrating, it's disappointing, but it's also still early, so I'm not going to call for Larson's head yet or anything like that. But, you know, but it's something to watch for, and if it's a trend that continues, that could be concerning.
Impromptu question that just made me think of that. Did you, talking about not panicking or not going for Larson's head yet, did you catch Torts on TV last week on ESPN? I did not.
I did, yeah. I watched the first episode of The Point, and he seemed a little nervous maybe on camera, but that particular show, I think, is a good outlet for him because it's not like a studio show during intermission where you have to have the really quick sound bites or anything like that. I think it's, you know, he knew the topics in advance and he had good insight to give. You know, they first topic was talking about the Tampa Bay Lightning and whether they could three-peat. And so John Buchkraus went to him first and said, you know, hey, you were the coach the last time they lost in the playoffs, you know, what changed from that year to the 2 years since where they've won the cup? And Torts gave a really good answer about how, you know, they were one dimensional in 2019. And then they, you know, they added pieces and they changed the way that they played and made it harder for them to be beaten. And anyway, so I think Torts will grow into that role and I'm excited to see what comes of that. I also just in general, I liked the format of The Point. It's hour-long show on ESPN in the late afternoon talking all about hockey. And this is where the new TV deal is going to give the sport so much more exposure than it had on NBC. Yep. There was no show like that really on NBC that got any kind of attention. Whereas, you know, think of how many businesses you go into that'll have the TV on in the afternoon, and it's on ESPN. You know, it's got, you know, Around the Horn and PTI and stuff like that. And like here, like once a week, there's going to be the point that's on there talking about the NHL, just like they've got, you know, the shows that are talking about the NFL or the NBA or whatever. So,
and I assume Turner is going to kind of help do what they did with the NBA, with the NHL. Mm-hmm. I mean, you even have Charles Barkley commercials now with the NHL. So, I mean, it's only going to help them.
Yeah. And, you know, both networks, you know, scooped up a lot of big names in hockey, you know, like TNT's got Wayne Gretzky on their crew. And and then they, you know, they picked up a lot of the best talent from NBC's coverage and from some of the Canadian networks coverage. So there's a lot of good talent involved. I expect better production value. And just the fact that there's two networks covering it, I think they're going to push each other to innovate the way they broadcast games. And it's not going to stagnate like it did with NBC. And then there's just the fact that you've got, you know, ESPN Plus now doing the out-of-market streaming. So I'm looking forward to watching more out-of-market games this year. So that'll be fun. But yeah, it was fun to see Torts. And I, you know, I'm happy for him to have this other job. And, you know, last year was rough, but I still have generally positive feelings about Torts as a coach and Torts as a person.
PD, you will be at Thursday's home opener, so you will obviously get to see the Blue Jackets honor Matthias Kivlenyk with a banner featuring his number 80 to hang in Nationwide Arena. That will happen for the 2021-22 season. I think we all agree it'll be cool if they did it beyond just the season, but the main point is they're honoring him, which we all expected. Will be an emotional ceremony, I would have to imagine, but really cool gesture moment for the team, Kivlenyk, his family. So just obviously wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so as I expected, they'll be painting the number 80 behind the goals, although it sounds like that's only going to be for the first weekend of games. Again, I'd like to see that for the whole season, but whatever. I had tweeted right when the news came out that, like, why is the banner up just for this season? Like, why not leave it up hanging all the time next to the Mr. Mac banner, you know? But then the team's going to be wearing a decal on their helmets all season. I think it's really cool that Matisse's family is going to come back over from Latvia to be part of the puck drop. I'm sure there's going to be some kind of tribute video, probably moment of silence. I can pretty much guarantee I'm going to cry. I'm going to get emotional during it, I'm sure. But I think it's going to be a special moment. You know, I'm curious to see how Elvis handles that. You know, presumably he would be in line to be the starter for the first game, but will that be too many emotions for him to then be playing right after something like that? Or is that something that would fire him up and get him to play even better? You know, I just don't know whether that's going to be the kind of emotion that hinders him or the kind of emotion that inspires him or focuses him. You know, that remains to be seen. But it's going to be an emotional night, but I'm glad that they are honoring him the way that he deserves to be honored and in front of fans in the way that we maybe were not able to honor him appropriately in the summer, because there was not the public tribute in the summer really in Columbus. You know, there was a gathering in Cleveland of the fans, but not so much in Columbus to the extent that you're going to get with the opening night crowd.
Definitely an emotional ceremony, to be sure. But yeah, it's a good point about Elvis's standpoint, because I can only imagine just all the emotions going through him, of everybody, but especially a guy like Elvis. And yeah, it's, you know, hopefully for him personally, you know, he's able to, you know, do his thing. But obviously, I couldn't even blame him when you think about it. It's hard to, you know, you don't know how anyone processes things like that, but I know that he's mentally prepared, obviously has processed this and is still processing and everything. So, I'm just thinking about all those guys, all the fans, and all the players that will be there to see that.
Yeah, for sure.
So we will wrap up with our predictions for the Metropolitan Division. They are back in the Metro this division this year, PD. So, PD, I'll let you go first with how you see it all wrapping up.
Well, let me flip this back on you. Do you think the Jackets will finish in last place like many are predicting them, or do you think that they can finish above someone in the division?
Yeah, I actually have them finishing sixth ahead of Philadelphia and New Jersey.
Ooh, that is interesting.
It is, yeah.
So
I'm being a little bit bold.
I kind of like the fact that you had Philly down there, because I'm definitely not high on the Flyers.
Me neither.
I don't think they're as good as some people say they might be. Just that they weren't very good last year, and I don't know that they did that much to make themselves better.
Exactly.
Obviously, a lot of it depends on how Carter Hart plays and whether he bounces back, which he's certainly capable of. But also, if he doesn't, then I wouldn't be surprised by that. And if he struggles, their backup is now Martin Jones, who is god awful. And they added Rasmus Ristolainen on defense, who is not good. But they had Ryan Ellis, who is good. Cam Atkinson, you know, I hope Cam does well, but, you know, you wonder how much tread's left on those tires, you know?
And that's the thing with a guy like Atkinson. It sounds like Philadelphia wanted a scorer or a finisher in Atkinson, just like Columbus wanted the playmaking abilities in Voracek. I just feel like I feel better with a guy like Voracek coming back to me. Sure, Atkinson might score 40 goals in Philly. I don't know, but I just feel like one for one, I like the Voracek dynamic coming back for me. But maybe that's because I'm looking at what we've seen the last few years, so we need a guy like that. And maybe Philly's like, yes, Atkinson. But I don't know. I just like more of what Voracek's going to provide for me than probably what I would assume. Not say he won't have a good year, but I don't know. Full package, I like what Voracek is bringing to Columbus's perspective.
I wonder if Voracek might end up being more reliable or more consistent, because Atkinson, even at his best, can get streaky.
You know,
so will Philadelphia have the patience for that if he goes through one of his cold streaks?
Right.
Because, you know, you just have to wait through it, and then he'll have a month where he's scoring like a goal a game. And, what if his shooting percentage just isn't up to stuff, which could just be bad luck. Or as we saw the last 2 years, there were times where he wasn't shooting enough, or the shots he was taking weren't high quality. And so, I mean, that's an up in the air thing. Whereas Voracek, even if he's not shooting, which they say he doesn't do enough, at least he is still able to be a passer and facilitate his teammates. But as we saw in preseason, like, he was willing to shoot and he got some nice goals himself. So,
And the other thing about it is Voracek puts up like 60 points a year at least. Atkinson is not that type of player, really. So if Philadelphia didn't do a lot in the offseason and then they get rid of a guy like Voracek and bring in Atkinson, I mean, you better hope you get offense across the board. So.
Exactly, yeah. But I don't see another 30-goal season from Atkinson. I think he's good for 25. The 30 might be pushing it. Yeah, then I also had New Jersey finishing last. I do think they'll be better, like a lot of people say. Dougie Hamilton was a great pickup. Ryan Graves also was a quietly good addition on defense. It's just kind of a solid second pair type guy. They've got some great young centers there in Hischier and Hughes. I just don't know what kind of scoring talent they have outside of those guys. So I just don't know where the goals are coming from. I have been in the past a fan of Mackenzie Blackwood as a goalie, and I think he's a really solid goalie. But now, you know, he's not getting vaccinated, so that means he's going to be unavailable for a lot of games for them. Will not play in any of the Canadian arenas or anything like that. So I think that could hurt them. And even if New Jersey's a better team than they have been, they're still not a playoff team yet or anything like that. But I think that could be an interesting fight at the bottom of the Metro. So I think, yeah, you and I agree that those three teams in some order will be the bottom. Then, yeah, it looks like we both have Pittsburgh at number five. You know, I don't want to put the nail in their coffin yet.
Exactly.
Because,
yeah.
I'm not going to say that this is the year they're done until they're actually done.
Yeah.
I do think, though, having Crosby and Malkin out with injury to start hurts them. They're also going to be missing Jake Gensel and Zach Aston-Reese due to COVID at the start of the season. So
And then the goaltending situation.
Yeah, you don't feel great about Tristan Jarry. So, you know, maybe when, you know, once they get Crosby and Malkin back, I think they can be dangerous again, but will they have dug themselves too big of a hole? So, you know, that remains to be seen. You know, Washington's another team.
Yeah.
That, again, do you count them out yet? Or will they still find a way?
Same with Pittsburgh. They could be, I think for me, Washington could be anywhere between 3 and 5. They could be out. They could be in. It just depends. And Ovechkin got hurt the other night. I don't know what his status is, but he went down. So
that would hurt them a lot. Yeah, I think I would say I would make the bold prediction that one of those teams will miss the playoffs. I just can't figure out which one it is. I just don't want to put any money on which team would miss it. But I think one of them will miss it. The Rangers, I think, will be better. I did not like their offseason. I didn't like the moves they made. But I just think there will be enough internal improvement from guys like Lafreniere and Kako that they should be able to make the next leap to getting into the playoffs. Maybe just as a wild card, but I think they can get in.
I think Rangers, I think even if it's just a wild card, I do have them finishing third. I was kind of bold there, mm-hmm. but a couple people I've talked to, they're like, they have to make the playoffs this year. It's time to go. And I just think Panarin's my heart player. He's my MVP this year. Mm-hmm. So I figure Panarin is Panarin, could be the guy that kind of gets him over the hump, at least into the playoffs.
Yeah, there's just, I think they've got enough talent there to be competitive. And then we both have Carolina at number two. I forget if we've talked about their offseason here on this podcast.
We were kind of questioning it based on the moves. Like, they got rid of Nedeljkovic. Yeah, I can never say it. Nedeljkovic. He's in Detroit now, so.
Yeah, and Seeds did a good profile a week or so ago about their offseason. Yeah, they let Dougie Hamilton walk, which I think is going to hurt them. They've still got a good defense, but that hurts them because he's so good. They added Tony DeAngelo, who, I mean, he has burned bridges in every place he's been. He's gotten on the wrong side of his teammates every place. So I think that's going to damage the locker room culture they've established there in Carolina. And also, he's not good defensively. He can provide offense. He's a good power play weapon, things like that. But he is brutal in his own end, assuming he doesn't piss off his teammates, which could very well happen. Yeah. They traded Warren Fogle, who I think was a solid depth forward, but they did get Ethan Barron returned, who I think is a nice pickup on defense. I think he's a really nice young defenseman. So I think Carolina still has enough talent that they are clearly a playoff team. I just think that they were on the cusp of being cup contenders last year and they didn't get better. They needed to take another step forward, and I don't think they did that. And they may have even gotten a little bit worse. So that's disappointing. So I guess that just leaves the Islanders as our pick to win the Metro. There's not necessarily anything that I love about that team or any player that, like, yeah, that's the guy that's going to carry them. I guess Barzal is good, maybe not great like we thought he was maybe from his rookie year. But I just, you know, Barry Trotz is such a good coach and he runs such a good system there that I think you'd be a fool to bet against the Islanders doing well, at least in the regular season. And hey, you know, and they've made it to the Eastern Conference Finals the last two seasons. I don't think I had them getting that far again this year. Oh no, I did. So I had them getting to the Eastern Conference Finals again and losing to Tampa Bay again. It feels like, I don't see why this year would be any different from the last two. So,
oh, you know what? I that's where I differed. I decided to put the Islanders over Tampa because I felt like, you know what, Tampa Bay is great. We know that, but they've already won back-to-back. Three-peat is so tough. Anything could happen. So I decided to say Islanders over Tampa. And I think every year I say Vegas. Decided to do that again. They're going to beat the Islanders for the final. They're going to knock out Colorado again, or knock out Colorado. And And I'll just run through my awards real fast. I had Panarin winning the MVP. I had Cal Makar winning the Norris. I had Vasilevsky winning the Vezina, and I had the Jackets over. We had our over under 76.5 points. I have them over.
Yeah, so I agreed with you on that. I agreed with you on Panarin for the heart. I had put Alex Pietrangelo as my Norris winner just because I'm so high on Vegas, and he's really good. Yeah. I do think Cale Makar is probably a better pick for Norris. I think he's just had some injuries last few years, I think, are the only reasons why he hasn't won it yet. But this could be definitely be the year for him. I'm not publishing this until Wednesday, so I could change my vote to Makar. But I'm going to stick with what I put down originally. And then, again, I put Robin Lehner as the Vezina winner. Again, just thinking I'm really high on Vegas.
I like Lehner.
They had kind of a quiet offseason. So, but I think they're still such a good team. And they are playoff tested. I think they know what it takes to make another run. And what I've heard some people speculate, if Jack Eichel does get traded this season, maybe Vegas finds a way to make that work. They've made a lot of big swings over the years. You know, they acquired Mark Stone, they acquired Max Pacioretty. So would it surprise you if they could swing a trade for Jack Eichel? I wouldn't rule it out. And he could be healthy in time for the playoffs. You know, watch out. Because Vegas has been so good without having a true number one center. You know, they had, William Karlsson is at best a 2C last few years. You know, Chandler Stephenson was another top six center for them. But again, he and Karlsson are both like a 2C. They're good players, but they don't have that like dynamic guy like an Eichel could be if they can find some way. Again, they'd probably have to package a lot of picks, prospects, maybe even some players from their roster, obviously, to make the cap situation work. But again, would not surprise me if they swung something like that.
Yeah, I feel like you're right. They probably could do something like that. I don't know. I was looking at their cap situation, and it doesn't look... They'd have to make something work somehow, but knowing Vegas, they will. And I remember back in the... Going back to the playoffs last year, Greg Wyshynski was like, I almost want to see Vegas not win and watch them go get Eichel or something. So,
yeah, exactly. I could see them taking like both Karlsson and Marchessault and trade those guys away, and that would be enough to take on Eichel's contract.
Oh, wouldn't that be crazy? Karlsson was just... came out of nowhere, and you know, obviously that was unsustainable with what he was doing, but he still had solid years since then. But yeah, if you get Eichel,
yeah,
now, assuming you know he's
now it looks like they do both have modified no trade clause, so they probably would not willingly go to Buffalo. But Riley Smith is making $5 million, and he doesn't have a no trade. They could move him. So yeah, there are ways I think they could massage that and make it work. But
maybe those players that would have to go to Buffalo, they can get excited about the Buffalo Bills because the Raiders aren't that great. So they'll be like, oh, at least we have a football team to watch. That's all I've got for Buffalo. Sorry,
there,
Buffalo.
There you
I mean,
go. Yeah.
Bills are legit. So
yeah, they are. They are. Yeah. Good for them.
Tough. Oh, gosh. Well, that is going to wrap it up this week. We will continue to churn out content at jacketscannon.com, at CBJCannon on Twitter and Facebook. Opening night is Thursday against the Arizona Coyotes, and we will see you all next week. Subscribe to the Cannoncast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts so you can catch every episode. Please leave us a 5-star rating, write a review. We love your feedback. Go to jacketscannon.com for more Blue Jackets coverage from us. Our theme music is the song Green Eyes by Angela Pearlie and the Howlin' Moons. Check out angelapearlie.com for more music and show dates.